final hour of Halford and Bruff in the morning. Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd in for Halford and Bruff this week. The official automotive sponsor of Halford and Bruff is the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today. I slowed it down there to make sure I got it right.
You said family correct.
Yep. Hour three of the program is brought to you by Campbell & Pound, real estate appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit campbell-pound.com today. Stan Riccio and Jamie Dodd. So we talked about the front office confidence in the last hour. You can find that on podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Also, Vanni Sartini joined us, Whitecaps manager in hour two. Opening hour, we talked a lot of the World Juniors with Adam Kimmelman, and also what happened last night. Recap of the National Bank Open, Canada's win at the World Juniors, and more. But also that happened yesterday, and Irfan Ghaffar set to join us in just a bit. But he reported yesterday on the People's Show that the Canucks held talks with Calvin DeHaan, and basically the big sticking point was the Canucks wanted to keep it to a one-year deal. DeHaan was hoping for two, and that's where negotiations kind of stood. Maybe DeHaan circles back and says, all right, I'll take the one. Maybe he doesn't. But it does raise a lot of questions, Jamie, because you have Quinn Hughes, you have Luke Shen, Oliver Ekman-Larsson, Tyler Myers, Jack Rathbone, Travis Dermott, Kyle Burrows, Tucker Pullman. And I just rattled off eight defensemen right there. Where does Calvin DeHaan fit into this picture? He doesn't.
No, and I mean, the obvious answer is, okay, let's say you're going to carry eight defensemen. You can send Kyle Burrows down. That's all right. But then you've still got, are you really going to invest in somebody who would want regular playing time and slot them over the likes of, you know, Jack Rathbone at this point, right? Are you going to add another body without a path to moving someone else and evening out the playing time a little bit? It doesn't make a ton of sense right now just based on the number of guys available they have on the blue line.
It's like, I get it. Okay. Like, we'll make this move because we really like this player. We think it's a good fit, and we'll figure out moving a player later. Like, I don't see how that equation really computes for me, because look, as roster spots, you know, kind of go away around the league, it's only going to get harder to move any kind of a contract, any kind of a player, Jamie.
Well, especially we've already seen how difficult it is to move money right now, especially if you're not taking a player back, if you're not taking salary back, right? Which in this scenario, they're probably not, because the whole goal is to get a guy off your roster, to open up a roster spot. So it's extremely difficult to do at the best of times. I think at this point of the year, as you said, teams have committed a lot of salary cap space. They've committed a lot of their roster spots. It's even harder to do that now.
It almost feels like with some of the Canucks moves, like there's a Lou Lamoriello like shadow kind of looming somewhere here. Like the Canucks front office knows something that we don't, obviously.
Well, they know a bunch of things that we don't.
We don't have all the information.
We do not have all the information, Reach.
We do not have all the information. But the Mikheyev signing, smart piece of business. I really like the player. I really like the fit with the roster. But it's like you already have a logjam at forward. How is this all making sense? Pursuing Calvin DeHaan when you've already got more than enough bodies on defense that are NHL caliber. It's more about, you know, the depth within your AHL system that is sometimes questionable. Like, it's almost as if they have a move waiting to be made that's just not yet made yet.
It's possible.
Yeah.
It's an interesting hypothesis. I don't know, though. I mean, I do wonder how much of checking in on Calvin DeHaan is, hey, maybe they like the player, right? As you said, think it's a good fit. We know they wanted to shake up the blue line and add talents. And as you said, look, we're going to talk to this player who's kind of surprisingly still on the market, see if there's a potential fit. We'll figure something out if it comes to fruition. We're okay being that deep and having that many players, that many NHL caliber players on defense to start the year. That's a possible explanation as well.
Why did you even go out and trade for Travis Dermott then?
Yep.
You know, like, just keep the $3 million that you saved for Travis Hamonic if you wanted to add all these other players.
Well, and already you have Quinn Hughes, OEL, Dermott, and Jack Rathbone down the left side, right? And I think one of the puzzles for the coaching staff is going to be, is there a way to have all four of those guys in the lineup on a nightly basis? Who are we moving over to the right side? Who are we partnering them all with to get, you know, effective minutes out of all of those players? Because for me, those are four of the Canucks' six best defensemen, right? So you want to figure out a way to get them all in the lineup. DeHaan's a lefty too. So if you bring him in, is one of those guys coming out?
I'm
not sure how much that improves.
Right,
you have to, but even then you're still, you know, you're looking at a situation where you're going to have to scratch one of your left-handed defensemen, right? Yeah. So it's hard to see the fit right now as things stand.
It is difficult to say the least. It's one of the, when we talked about the confidence rankings, this is part of the knock for me on what the front office has been able to do to this point. It's like they're making moves. You know, some of the moves they made, it's almost as if, oh, we figure we'll be able to trade Tyler Myers, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't happen. And you think about the obstacles that are in place to trade a player like Tyler Myers, not just a limited number of teams that may be interested in acquiring the player. And don't get me wrong, I do think Tyler Myers would have interest around the league. Erik Gudbranson got 4 years and $4 million per season from the Columbus Blue Jackets. Right shot defensemen, even mediocre ones, are in demand.
With size and all of that. Yeah.
They're in demand. So Myers, 2 years, $6 million, somebody would be willing to take it. The thing is, one, yes, the money is still an issue for teams. Two, he had no trade protection. So you have like hurdles to trade that player. So you can't really be adding pieces until you're able to move them out. It's part of the dilemma of, you know, yeah, we'd like to move this player to open up some cap space, but at the same time, like, we don't want to take away some of our competitive pieces for next year unless we have a replacement that we feel comfortable with.
Myers played big minutes for them.
Yeah.
Right? Say whatever you want about his performance, about his track record, about what you can reasonably expect from him next season. He played big minutes and did it pretty well. That OEL Myers pairing, for the most part last year, was very effective in their role for the Canucks. So that's part of the hesitancy as well. I don't think they would be happy to just trade Tyler Myers and not replace him with any sort of NHL caliber defenseman, right? They want to still be competitive next year. That's why they went out and signed Ilya Mikheyev, right? That's why they signed Curtis Lazar to shore up the bottom six. That's the goal still. And, you know, a move like trading Tyler Myers and bringing in Calvin DeHaan would make sense. Okay, hey, we got the big money off our books. We got the shorter term, cheaper player in to replace them. Maybe it's not an exact one-to-one fit in terms of role, but we got cheaper and we shored up our blue line in the process. That would make sense. It's just a question of, as you said, can they jump over all of the hurdles involved in trading Tyler Myers?
You think Quinn Hughes could play the right side? Like, if you were to choose one defenseman on the left, outside of Travis Dermott, that could play on the right, since he's already done it before, would it be Quinn, OEL, or Rathbone?
It would probably be Quinn Hughes, just because he's so talented. Yeah. I'm guessing he could figure it out. I think the counter argument would be, don't take your best defenseman out of his comfort zone. But again, with his...
Also, who do you pair him with then?
Would you look at OEL?
Yeah.
That might be the way I would go, right? And maybe that helps OEL get into a bit of a better situation in terms of his usage. You know, we talked a lot last season about they're using him in a shutdown role. He's performing admirably in that role, but that's really not his game, right? He's used to getting more offensive opportunities. That's ideally how you would get the most out of him. If you move Quinn Hughes over to the right, you pair him with OEL, well, that's a chance to maybe you get more out of OEL as well because he's in more of those offensive situations.
The other thought that comes to mind, and this one comes from Kevin Calgary on the Humanoid text message inbox, brought to you by Dunbar Lumber. Could be a Rathbone trade in the works. His style doesn't really fit as a third-pairing defenseman. With Dermott on the right side and Rathbone traded, that leaves a spot for DeHaan. I don't know why people are so quick to trade Jack Rathbone. Smooth skating, left shot defenseman. Hey, you know who didn't care that they've got a really good puck-moving defenseman on their third pair? The Colorado Avalanche. Right? How good did Bowen Byram look in the playoffs? And sure, Bowen Byram, fourth overall pick, Jack Rathbone, third round selection. Different type of young player I'm talking about to a certain extent. But as far as mold or type, personality trait of a player, similar in that sense. Smooth skating, puck moving defenseman, offensively inclined. Guess what? The league wants more of those types of players and less stay-at-home guys. That's the reality of the league now. And on a third pair, you're probably looking at it as, and maybe why Dermott and Rathbone aren't really seen as a fit is maybe because you want Rathbone to have a stay-at-home type next to him, more like a Quinn Hughes, Luke Shen type of pair rather than Jack and Dermott.
Yeah, but to your point, that trend of being happy to have, you know, the more skilled defenseman farther down your lineup, that's only going to continue, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think we should look at it and say, well, they have Quinn Hughes, so that means they can't have any other, you know, undersized puck-moving defenseman. No, you can have a bunch of those guys in your lineup. You probably want to have a bunch of those guys in your lineup. And for Jack Rathbone, you know, I mean, they just signed him to a two-year deal, right? A two-year one-way deal. I think that's a player they're pretty high on. He had an excellent season with Abbotsford. It sounds like they were very, very impressed with what he was able to do in his campaign, despite some of the stop and start that he had because of COVID and injuries. I don't know. Look, he's certainly not untouchable, obviously. And if the right offer comes along, you consider it. But I don't think they signed him in that deal with the intention of trading him. I think that's a player they want to integrate into the lineup and see what he can do at the NHL level.
Rutherford has basically said they want to give him an NHL shot.
Yeah.
So I would say Rathbone is more than likely to be your opening night third pair D-man for the Vancouver Canucks this year. One other element of this conversation is speculation around Tucker Poolman and his health.
Mm-hmm.
And that may open up some salary cap room if he ends up on LTIR. That may open up a roster spot, but Irf mentioned this yesterday as well. I believe Patrick Johnston backed it up in the province a little bit, that there is still some questions around Tucker Poolman and how healthy he's going to be this year. I mean, it's unfortunate. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Tucker Poolman was great last year for the Vancouver Canucks, but I do think there's a solid defenseman in there in a third pair role. The problem with the Canucks is that they've got too many third pair defensemen.
Yeah.
And they didn't need another one for 4 years at $2.5 million.
No, you need to upgrade. You need to find the guys that aren't just, okay, they can be in the top four like Luke Shen, but are no doubt about it, quality top four NHL defensemen, right? And That's still the, Tucker Poolman can absolutely be a useful player, right? As you said, in a bottom pairing role or in certain other situations. But why are you committing to that for 4 years, and how much other upside is there? And is it going to prevent you from doing other things to bring in players that raise the ceiling a little bit more?
Well, I do believe the idea was to have Quinn Hughes and Tucker Poolman potentially play together. Poolman be more of the stay-at-home type, similar to what Quinn Hughes, Luke Shen ended up being for Quinn Hughes. But the problem was when Quinn Hughes and Tucker Poolman were paired together, like Quinn Hughes just wasn't generating offense anywhere near the same level that he was with Luke Shen on the ice.
And the interesting thing with Tucker Poolman is his best attribute is probably his skating, right? Yeah. Now, he's not an offensively talented defenseman, right? And we saw that, as you said, when he was paired with Quinn Hughes.
Sometimes he was trying to be a little too heroic with his offensive
instincts. But I don't know if he's that kind of perfect fit for the, oh, okay, we'll play him as the stay-at-home guy with the, you know, offensively talented defenseman, because he does need to use his skating to really be effective. That's part of his game. He needs to use that mobility, and he plays a different style in that way than Luke Shen. And I think that's why Hughes and Shen has been such a more a cleaner pairing for the Canucks.
The Canucks defense as a whole is still the it's still the major question mark with the team.
Oh yeah.
And how they go about, like when we talk about the confidence rankings like we did last hour, how they go about reshaping it, because they've talked about reshaping it so much, how they do that is ultimately the question that, one of the major questions that decides whether or not this team will be able to compete for a Stanley Cup in the next few years, Jamie.
Yeah, though, well, there's no doubt. I mean, look at the forward group. Yeah. You feel really good about it, especially, and we can talk all day long about how, for the future, trading JT Miller is probably best for the franchise. But in terms of this year, if he's still here, if he's playing on your team, that gives you really, really great depth down the middle. You look at adding Mikheyev. They already had some pretty good wing depth. Then you add another very talented player who can also help out on your penalty kill, which was an area of need for them. Their forward group, there is a lot to like there, especially with the upside that Kuzmenko has, that Pod Colson has. You know, can Hoglander have a bounce back year? There's a lot of things that you like about that group. And then obviously in the crease, you know, we all know what Thatcher Demko is capable of. I'm pretty high on Spencer Martin's ability to be a really solid backup this year for Thatcher Demko. You feel really good about that position as well. It's only the blue line that, as you said, is holding them back from, you know, going up a tier or two in the NHL hierarchy and really moving into the category of a truly competitive team. And I think that's not going to be solved going into this year. That's a long-term project. But to kind of bring it back to our confidence rankings, I think one of the reasons some fans that we heard from in the Dunbar Lumber text line started to lower the confidence rankings a little bit is the expectation that there would have been at least a start to reshaping the blue line yet, right? And again, there's situations and things beyond their control that make it difficult to do that. But it's also a fair question. When are we going to see that remodeling effort really get going in earnest?
Christopher stuck in traffic, getting really philosophical while he's stuck in traffic on having too many offensive defensemen. When is the NHL going to start adopting creative lineups the way the Warriors did in the NBA with their death lineup? I think five players on the ice who can all skate like the wind and shoot and score would be chaos for other teams to defend against. It's time that the NHL stopped talking about acquiring a stay-at-home defenseman and started thinking about five guys that can put the puck in the net. I believe he was doing he was probably sending that on Siri or on Apple CarPlay or whatever, because I was trying to like manage through some of the typos and some of the funny things that were in that text. But Christopher, your point is well taken. Positionless hockey, you know, positionless basketball has become a thing. Mm-hmm. Small lineups, big lineups, you know, you see a lot of different types of things. Hybrid players in the NFL are becoming more of a thing, right? Debo Samuel is probably the best example of that. Can it be done? Like, is positionless hockey ever going to be a thing? I don't know if I see it.
I don't know about true positionless hockey, but one way you accomplish that is by finding more defensemen with really high-end offensive skills, right? Yeah. And they're still defensemen. You're still calling them defensemen. That's still their job, right? You're still lining up three forwards and two defensemen, but you're also tailoring your strategy with the understanding that, hey, these guys we have in the blue line, they can contribute offensively too, right? And it's easy to point to, you know, Cale Makar and his goal scoring, right? And his ability. Cale Makar's a unicorn. We understand that. Not every team is all of a sudden going to turn around and have a Cale Makar. But I do think we're already seeing it, the increased emphasis on skill from the blue line. I don't think that's going away. I don't think that trend is stopping anytime.
It's also incumbent on all five players on the ice to be able to pivot, skate backwards, and be able to defend one-on-one when a quality offensive player is coming down on you. Think about how many times a forward gets caught covering for a D-man,
and it goes poorly.
Yeah, the player with the puck is just like chomping at the
bit. Licking their chops. Oh, let's go.
This is it. This is my time to get on the highlight reel. Plays of the month. Here I come. Dipsy doodle through the legs. Backhand. Top cheese. Let's go. You know, that's... We saw it with Bo Horvat against Jaden Schwartz.
Mm-hmm.
And also Vince Dunn, who can't play defense. So, you know, like... When that happens, it happens all the time in overtime, right? You're playing 3-on-3. It's chaos everywhere.
The defenseman jumps up, and then forward one of the forward is back.
It's just like, oh, man, this is...
It's over.
You're toast.
It's over.
Like, all right, Demko, Demmer, you're going to have to save us here. Like, whoever's back there, right? It's not just about the defenseman. It's about being able to have five guys on the ice that can play different types of situations that would end up happening out of...
Yeah.
You know, whatever happens in a game.
Well, and that, you know, to bring it back to the original texter and the point about the Warriors, like the reason they were able to do the death lineup, the original death lineup, was they had a guy like, you know, Draymond Green who can guard centers and rebound, but also play on the perimeter and be a playmaker. Like Harrison Barnes and Andre Iguodala who could guard much bigger players, but they also had the skill set to be perimeter players and shooters as well. And I think, you know, we had this text come in unsigned, five guys on the ice and no one can defend. No thanks. I think there's a bit of still a misconception that guys like Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes can't defend, and, you know, and especially in transition defense, those guys are extremely effective, right? So I don't think you are completely sacrificing your defensive game if you trend more towards the high skill type of players on your blue line. You're probably going to have to defend in a different way. And yeah, you're going to want to make sure that you have defensively responsible forwards out there as well. But you can still be a really good defensive team, even if you lean heavily on very, very skilled defensemen.
I have a new favorite pastime. I feel like we've talked a little too much Canucks for August 11th. I have a new favorite pastime, Jamie. It's not like golf,
all right,
lawn bowling, or anything like that. Although I do love a good game of bocce. If anybody's down, like, you know, let's get it going.
You're going down, Reach.
It's a great game. I love bocce.
Bocce is fantastic. So I wonder if this is one of the reasons Irf was unable to join us this morning. But, like, one of my new favorite pastimes with any friend of mine that happens to be a Manchester United fan... Like, I just love sending them an endless stream of all the terrible things that are happening with Manchester United right now. Like, between Bick and Irf, they must absolutely just hate me right now. Because, like, I don't know. I haven't sent them a text about anything else, at least in the last 10 days. Just what a train wreck Manchester United
Maybe
is.
Maybe Irf intentionally agreed to come on the show just with the intent of no-showing, just to get back at you. It's like, oh yeah, I'll come on for sure. Give me a call, 8 o'clock. No problem.
I don't know if I want to sling that slander, but it is a theory right now. It's a working theory for the reason Irf wasn't able to join us this morning.
Well, you're fortunate too, because we have a lot of United fans in our orbit here at 650.
Batch Dick,
Dom.
Irf, Dom.
Yeah.
All those Red Devils fans from years past.
It's a target-rich environment for
you. Yeah, just like, you know, loving that basically every year their team would win a title with Sir Alex Ferguson around. They won a treble. They would win everything back in the day. Now it's just like, oh, Cristiano Ronaldo doesn't want to stay here anymore. Oh, wait, we're going to buy this guy? Oh, well, he stinks.
Well, even just there is something so sad about, and I know it works a little differently in European soccer, but when they're like, oh, man, do you think we can edge out Tottenham for the fourth place and get into the Champions League? Like, you guys were like the winningest sports team in history, and now you're like desperate for fourth place? That's sad.
Bick hasn't talked to me since I said Manchester United is the New York Rangers pre-salary cap era in the NHL. Just like a bloated wage bill, signing every big-name player that they possibly can, but they still stink. Generally, the best predictor in the Premier League for what the table is going to look like is wage expenditure.
Mm-hmm.
But United, Manchester United is breaking that trend.
Manchester United breaks that correlation.
Because they're over £200 million on their wage bill. And they are not going to finish top of the table. I'll tell you that much.
It's especially, it must be especially galling for them to have Liverpool and City just on like this unreal run of dominance.
Yep.
Two best teams in the world racking up trophies
as
United just continues to be mediocre.
Anthony and White Rock, this is when I turn off the radio. Sorry, not sorry, Anthony.
You lasted this long.
Just added to my list of friendships broken. Taking too much joy in what's happening with Manchester United. But hey, I'm sure most Canucks fans do it when their Leaf fan friends lose another first round of the playoffs.
We certainly don't do it here on the station.
No, not at all.
Not on the show particularly.
Definitely not. Never happened. Don't know what you're talking about. Coming up, what we learned. Get your submissions in 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. You're listening to Riccio and Dodd on Halford and Brough in the Morning. Final segment, Halford and Brough in the Morning with Dan Riccio and Jamie Dodd. This program is brought to you by the Delari Family. Oh.
Wow!
Just say Familia at this point.
La Familia.
The Delari Familia of Acura dealers. Experience the Delari difference today. Why is that easier for me?
That's not good.
I don't even know.
Well, it's your heritage. Coming through.
Also, hour three of the program is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit campbell-pound.com today. I used to get chirped for saying program, and Halford says it all the time. Nobody ever says anything to Halford.
Oh, they come at him.
Oh, really?
Every show.
Really?
There's always at least one texter. Why do you say program? Why are you saying it like that?
It's not the same as Pilgrim?
No. Mm. I like it. It sounds classy, the program.
Yes.
It sounds so classy.
This fine program.
How is that classier?
I don't know. It just sounds
classy. What?
It's definitely classier.
Sure. Sure.
If you're saying you're going to watch the program, it doesn't sound as good as I'm going to watch the program.
Yes. To be honest, anything is classier than the first hour of the show today. When all we did was talk about Bogdan's hot ass
and Daniel Vogelback's milkshake,
which the podcast won't hear.
You had to be listening live to hear more about Daniel Vogelback's milkshake, though. Keith Hernandez,
yes.
One text. What?
What?
Excuse me, what?
Very fair. Very fair text. Pardon me?
Yeah.
The funny thing about the morning show is when you're at the, like, this is the final segment, and you want to, like, goof around, you know, you've done the show, you're kind of just like, okay, we can see the finish line, let's have some fun. I feel like it's also when the most people are listening, right?
Yes.
Like, people, not necessarily in their car at 6 or 6:30, but now they're, like, finishing their commute. Like, oh, yeah. Turn on the radio.
I mean, it's totally the opposite of what I usually do with Sat when we're on 4 to 7, and, like, 6:30 is just, like...
Just do whatever.
Do whatever, and we have less listeners at 6:30.
Yeah, of course.
So it works out that way, but... Here on the morning, it's a little bit different.
Like, all right, I got in my car. Time for some hard-hitting sports radio. Yeah. Let's go.
Now is when we do the audience interaction because we get more
right.
People,
exactly.
Right?
Like, exactly.
Now is when people are stuck on the portman and they're texting into the show. All right. Let's get to what we learned here on Halford and Brough. What we learned, I'll kick it off. We are 104 days away from the World Cup, Jamie. And why did I learn that today? Because Morocco just fired, they sacked their manager. 104 days out from the World Cup, Morocco's like, nope, we're going to go with a new guy.
New direction.
Yeah. So this is good news for Canada. Like, basically, you can bank a win for Canada in the group stage.
Wow.
Yep.
Morocco is in disarray.
Sorry.
What is going on with this tournament, though? We have
schedule
changes.
Are we 104 days away from the original starting date or the new starting date? That's the question.
Can't confirm. I don't know.
Because they did have to change the starting date. Did we talk? I can't even remember.
Did we talk about this yesterday on the show?
No. Okay. It all blends together.
Basically, FIFA was like, oh, wait, Qatar is supposed to play the first game of the tournament.
Yeah.
I think we messed up the schedule. Guys.
So what happened is, yeah, normally the host plays in the first game, the kickoff game, the kind of opening ceremony, which makes sense. One of the high up political figures in Qatar, though, was like, well, I want to have a deluxe fireworks show before our first game. If they had been the actual first game, it would have been in the middle of the day. Can't really do a fireworks show in the middle of the day. So they're like, all right, we'll make you the third game on day one. So you're at night and you can do your fireworks show. And then I guess like months later, the schedule must have been set for a while now. They came back and they said, you know what? That actually doesn't make any sense. We're just going to put you a day earlier at night. So you're still the first game.
Yeah, you get the first game.
Just a really well-planned, well-run event coming up here.
Everything about the Qatar World Cup is well-planned.
Sensational.
Not as well-run as the Moroccan national team, by the way.
Not enough hotel rooms. People are going to have to fly in and out day of game to watch their team play. It's going to be great.
Great.
It's in the middle of November and December. Awesome. Yeah, moo cow that.
I'll go here. What we learned, Kevin Durant might be interested in a reunion.
No, stop.
With James Harden.
Stop.
With James Harden.
No, he doesn't.
This is per Ian Begley, NBA reporter for SNY TV out of New York, saying Kevin Durant reportedly views the Philadelphia 76ers as a desired landing spot, and also saying there are high-ranking members of the Sixers who feel strongly about engaging with Brooklyn on a Durant trade, and Joel Embiid has made it clear to management he wants them to exhaust every option in trying to acquire Kevin Durant, a new entry in the KD sweepstakes. And the funniest thing about this to me is the fact that, and look, maybe James Harden wanted out of Brooklyn more because of Kyrie Irving and everything going on with Kyrie Irving, and maybe him and Kevin Durant totally cool with each other. It is kind of funny to me, though, that James Harden got to Brooklyn, looked around and said, man, this is a disaster. I am getting out of here. Goes to Philadelphia, and now KD is like, that's a good idea. I'll come join you. That's a great idea. Maybe I'll come there, too. I just imagine James Harden be like, dude, I was trying to get away from you. Take the hint, buddy.
Yeah.
Take the hint.
I wanted out. I'm like trying to think of like what the Sixers would even trade. They already traded Simmons for Harden.
Tyrese Maxey and like
Tobias
every first round pick they have and swap for the next 15 years. I guess that would be the deal. That's about it. Yeah, Tobias Harris.
NBA trades are the wildest because they like most of the time just don't make any sense.
Yeah.
And every Durant trade is hard to sort of fathom. Like even the Juan Soto trade, it's like, okay, bunch of prospects most people have never really heard of unless you're a baseball diehard, right? Like, oh, they traded a bunch of good prospects for Juan Soto. And he's like one of the best hitters in baseball. So like that's fine. Kevin Durant, it's like, well, like how do you fit him on a roster? How do you make the money work? How do you like first round picks, especially late ones, don't really mean anything in the NBA.
Nope.
So it's hard to get anywhere close to value. And the Sixers definitely would not provide that for the Brooklyn Nets. All right. Moo cow that.
What we learned, since you just mentioned the Juan Soto trade, I have to say, John Morosi, what we learned was on Fan 590 today, he said the Blue Jays' offer for Juan Soto was Bo Bichette, Gabriel Moreno, Ricky Tiedemann, and Aurelvis Martinez. That was the package, the rumored package that the Blue Jays would be sending to the Nationals.
See, I know those guys, and that seems insane.
I do that. I do that every day of the week, Reach. Oh, yeah. Bichette, every day of the week.
Bichette's inclusion is the one I'm sort of balking at. I know it's Juan Soto, but all of those prospects know. And Bichette.
And Laddie, you like Bo Bichette too much.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I like what his potential could be. He's such a doubles machine when he's on.
And yeah.
I don't know. I just... It's a great, would have been an interesting deal if it went down, that's for sure.
I would have driven Bo Bichette. I would have flown to Toronto and then rented a car and driven him to the airport.
Well, who's playing short for you then after?
Probably Espinal.
Yeah, because you have traded a lot of your shortstop prospects as well. That's a fair question.
Yeah, because you would be trading Bo and Aurelvis Martinez. That's not ideal.
Maybe they're high on Espinal, higher than we thought they were.
Maybe in this scenario they keep Groshans around, right? Because they did end up trading him. Isn't he a short? He's a short, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
They're a little lacking, and they traded Austin Martin last
year,
too, for
Berríos.
So they're really lacking in the shortstop department.
That is a fascinating trade offer. But again, like I know more Blue Jays prospects than I do
any other team. Yes,
well, we saw Tiedemann here in Vancouver this year.
Yeah,
so people know what kind of electricity he brings.
Electric. That seems like a lot, but not enough to get Juan Soto. Like in a trade like that, it just comes down to like what the acquiring team really covets,
and it's what they think of the prospects ultimately, right?
Ultimately.
Like we can look at it and say, oh yeah, that roughly matches up with what the Padres did, but if they happen to be really high on one of those guys. And maybe they have some of the same concerns about Bo Bichette that I do, you know. Then they'll go for that other package.
All right, moo cow that. Let's get to some of the humanoid submissions. The old school printer telling us what we learned on the Dunbar Lumber text line.
Marcus and Gibson's.
Am I supposed to call it something else?
The dot matrix.
Oh, okay.
There you go. Marcus and Gibson's coming in hot here. What we learned, I learned that Kevin Durant drama is the only thing keeping him relevant. His play definitely isn't. Ooh. Hashtag washed. I mean, he averaged 30 points a game last year. So he's still getting it done. He's still getting it done at a pretty high level on the court.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna throw the washed hashtag out there quite yet for Kevin Durant.
Chris from Surrey. When I bring up all the Leafs first round exits to my girlfriend, after she chirps the Canucks, I end up sleeping on the couch with our dog for a night or two. Well, Chris, hopefully you've learned your lesson, or you're just willing to take the punishment for a night or two. If so, you're committed to the cause of chirping the Leafs.
Hey,
another first round exit.
You gotta be committed.
What we learned, get your what we learns in on the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Three-putt Shane, what we learned, I learned that today Halford and Brough have more holidays than teachers.
the perks of the morning show gig.
Yeah, they have a timeshare in Florida together. I mean, they got to get down there three weeks a year to make the most of it. And
do they actually Florida, not Arizona?
I hear it's Florida. Mm. Timeshare.
That was the most, you know, we're talking about me doing it with Brough next week. I was stunned. I thought it was like in their contract that they only work together. I didn't even know it was possible that they would have a guest host from outside the show come in.
It's not often, and I know they don't like it, so you might have to be ready, Jamie. You might have to be ready. You might be a little
sounds
sorely.
Great. This is going to be the best week ever.
What we learned. Jamie and Brough is going to be must-listen radio next week.
He's going to call you Halford approximately 1,000 times.
That's fine. I can live with
also,
that.
Also, by the way, we got a
text
in.
I've been called worse.
We got a text in, though. Apparently, it's Halford's birthday.
Yes, I saw it? That. Yeah. What we learned from Chef Swagger, it's Mike Halford's birthday. Happy birthday, Halford.
That's key, getting your birthday off.
Oh, yeah. Very important.
Yeah.
Very important.
Or are you the opposite, where it's just like, whatever. I'm 35 now. It's good.
I'm okay with working on my birthday as long as I go out and do something at night, you know, go for dinner or something.
Like have a nice little quarter chicken dinner.
I'm in my 30s now, okay? Yeah.
Yeah.
A trip to Swiss Chalet for my birthday would be fantastic.
I would love to have the day off for my birthday, but I also don't really care about birthdays. I just like days off. I am definitely at that stage where it's like, great, yeah. Another year.
Jamie,
woohoo.
Jamie is the opposite of Bill Belichick. He's more days off. More days off.
Like you're more
Absolutely.
Excited about the day off work than you are about the actual birthday.
Well, yeah, of course. Of course I am.
That's the best gift of all.
Yes, not working. Fantastic.
What we learned from Iron Blair, off-season is in full swing. And, today is Mike Halford's birthday. Yeah.
Lots of people just really want us to know. This one comes in from Kevin on the road. What we learned, my new stovetop comes with Wi-Fi. I have so many questions. I got to say, I've never been in a situation where I'm like, dang, man, if only the stovetop had Wi-Fi, then I'd really be in business.
Yeah.
I don't really get the whole, like, oh, your fridge has Wi-Fi. Your washing machine has Wi-Fi.
You can command it from the road.
What does the stovetop use the Wi-Fi for?
I
what are you
truly
app
have
on
no
your
idea.
Phone
you know
if
what?
You want
to
clean it or yeah. if you want to just do whatever you want.
I've always
hey,
wanted to
I,
check my email
But I thought we're never
I'm
supposed to use
eggs.
The self-clean on the ovens.
Wait, what? Why do they put it on there then?
I don't know.
You've never been out and be like, hey, did I leave the oven on? Maybe now there's an app you can go on and be like, oh, yeah.
Or you're like, you're at the store. You're like, got your, I don't know. Something that you're about to put in the oven?
Does Balak have shares like, in like a smart appliance company or something?
You're
He's really pushing it here.
You get a notification. Hey, someone's using my oven.
Yeah.
What the heck?
That classic scenario that happens all the time when somebody breaks into your house to use your oven.
It's happened, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. You get home and the burglar is making an oven-ready pizza.
Putting a lasagna in there for you.
Hey, I just put on some banana bread. Interested? Only if there's chocolate chips.
What we learned. Let's get to more of them.
That was a good one.
From the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Like, would you really preheat the oven from the road? You know, is that something you would do? That doesn't
I don't know,
seem
man.
Safe.
Well, sometimes when you're making an omelet, you just want to check some stock quotes.
So I guess.
You need
if,
that internet access.
I guess Always if connected. You were, like, taking transit home and, you know, you want to save those 5 minutes and preheat it. This one says you download recipes to the range. Well, unless the range is also cooking them for me, that doesn't do a lot.
Does it go to the store?
I can already find recipes.
You download recipes? Why not? Why wouldn't you just use your phone or your iPad?
Probably has a display and it has it right there for you.
Snoop the dog says saving fires from happening or preheat the pasta water from the couch. I guess if you're really like, man, I don't want to go to the kitchen. I'll turn the oven on from here.
I mean, I guess there's a safety thing maybe where you think you leave your oven on while you're going to work.
Yeah, that's
and
what
you
I said.
Connect, yeah, right? Like but you could turn it off, connect it via Wi-Fi, and make sure you don't burn your house
this
down.
This is all leading up to, though, you know, a horrible day when you go home and you find out your stove has been hacked.
Why does my stove have a virus?
That's a good point. It's a big security vulnerability. Mm-hmm.
Thought I paid extra for the McCaffrey antivirus on this one.
Gotta get a new stove.
Some teenager in Estonia is turning your stove on at random moments. Wants $20,000 to get control back.
We're joking, but this is totally probably not out of the realm of possibility.
It's true.
That same guy's going to text us back tomorrow. I was listening back to the previous day's podcast, and I noticed you're making fun of Wi-Fi stoves. Do better. Halford and Bruff would not do this.
Yes. Calling the Best Buy Geek Squad. I think somebody hacked my stove.
It's making funny noises. It's beeping incessantly. It's opening and closing on a whim.
I'm sure the Geek Squad guy is just going to be like, sir, this is an Arby's.
I would love to see the calls that those kind of guys go out on.
It's so funny.
I'm sure we have a few listening.
I can't find the start guys. Menu. You sold me a bad computer.
That's your dishwasher, sir. Yeah.
Huddy in Victoria says, when you leave for work in the morning, you put your dinner in the oven, and then on your way home, you can automatically turn your oven on and have your dinner cooked at the same time that you arrive. I'm nowhere near organized enough to have a full dinner ready to go in the morning to put in the oven. There's like zero chance I'm ever doing that. That's not happening.
If you were that prepared, you would buy a slow cooker.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
It's like we all had that great idea of the slow cooker. This is great. You know, I can just like set it and forget it.
Yeah.
You know, it's different. I know those were different products, but the phrase still works the same. But how many times, like, I've done it like twice, you know, where you set it and forget it with the slow cooker.
It's kind of like a bread maker where it's like, oh my God, I should make fresh bread all the time. And then, you use it once.
I really don't, you know, I don't get rice cookers, you know, like what? Like,
I used mine yesterday.
Really? Is it really that important? Like, why not just use a pot?
Well, you're cooking other stuff on the stove. You just want the rice to cook on the side. You just throw a bunch in there and forget about it.
Well, at our place, our air fryer is the most used appliance in the entire house. The air fryer is a godsend. It is wonderful.
Yeah, Andy's hard on to...
I've never used an air fryer.
Well, I'm a terrible cook. Like, so literally, I put anything in this thing, I press one button, and I'm done. I mean, even I can't screw it up.
What is the... Like, does it make it taste better, or is it just ease? Is it that you can't screw it up? What's the pitch?
It also tastes... Well, it's super easy to use an air fryer.
What did Helfert say, though? He said something about... One of the meals that he cooked, it had a certain like crunchiness to it that you don't get. You know,
it definitely does. Food tastes great in it. Like, I've never had a bad meal out of an air fryer.
All right,
it was the tater tot. He says you get the crunchy outside, but you still have the soft inside. Hmm. What you don't get when you just bake them.
Well,
so there you go.
I'm not as much of a tater tot connoisseur as Halford. So
he was talking about the mouth feel of the tater tot. I'm 100% serious.
Oh boy. Yeah. Snoop the dog points out in the scenario where you're turning on your oven as you leave work, he says, how many dinners would be ruined or charred due to unexpected traffic jams?
Yes.
It's a good point.
You might turn it off, too.
But like, you don't want to be stuck with the poor man. You're like, oh, man, how much should I lower it? Should I turn it all the way off? Should I just take it down to like 250?
Pop pulls you over. Hey, I saw you on your phone. Yeah, I'm just adjusting my stove. It's going to set the house on fire.
That's a good point.
We're slow cooking this now. Oh, geez. Got a closure in the Massey Tunnel. That dinner isn't going to make it.
Got to pause that lasagna.
Not actually, by the way, for the people driving.
Yes, no.
No, yeah, don't worry. Don't worry.
Not actually. What if your stove opens an OnlyFans account?
Wouldn't it be an OnlyPans account?
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
Who this man?
Indeed.
I'm up after
actually, I guess what would somebody would like hack it and use it to mine Bitcoin or something. It'd be like all the processing power is going to mine Bitcoin. It's on all the time, running. Your energy bill is through the roof. You're like, what's going on?
Hi, Geek Squad guy. My stove isn't cooking properly. Oh, we found out somebody is using your stove to mine Ethereum.
To mine cryptocurrency. Sorry, guy.
Apparently, it is mined 17 Dogecoin in the last 30 minutes.
This person texts in, a slow cooker, buy it and forget it. It's a good one. I like that.
All right.
What if your stove opens an OnlyFans account? Such a great question. Such a great question.
Things we got to worry about now.
Things that we didn't know we'd have to worry
Not
about.
Not where I thought the segment was going when we started it, but there you go.
Apparently, that's what we learned is all about. All right, we have one day left of Riccio and Dodwell and Halford and Bruff in the morning. Apparently, from some texters, we've learned exactly what it is to be Halford and Bruff in the morning.
Sure.
Mostly speaking about nonsense.
Pretty much.
10% sports.
We did a lot of that today.
Professionalism and maturity. That's what it's all about here on the morning show.
Bogdan's hot ass. Cameron Maben talking about rubbing balls. Baseballs, I imagine.
Yep. He's rubbed up a few.
Basketballs, who knows?
I'm going to book Bogdan's for tomorrow's show. It'll be a one-minute hit.
Let's
just going to ask
go.
Him how to pronounce his name, and then we hang up.
Daniel Vogelbach's milkshake. All right.
Good stuff all around.
Yep, that'll do it for today. For A-Dog and Laddie, my co-host Jamie Dodd, you the people, I'm Dan Riccio. You've been listening to Sportsnet 650.
So, yeah, I've rubbed up quite a few balls in my life.